We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
I'm Chinee Ogwumike.
I'm Lisa Leslie, and we're very excited to tell you about our new podcast with Blue Wire, Front and Center.
Lisa and I are breaking down what's going on in our lives, in the world, and keeping it 100.
We're also learning from amazing guests as well, like Emmanuel Acho.
People that show love to me, I forever got their back.
Vivica A. Fox.
If the foundation isn't right, then the rest of it's going to go wrong from there.
And more.
Subscribe to Front and Center today.
Fantasy Football Report, a RotoViz radio news show covering the serious and mocking the ridiculous NFL news of the last week. I'm Blair Andrews. My co-host is Hassan Rahim. Hassan, how's it going?
Living the dream, and this was just another bye heavy week and another Dalvin Cook week. But how's it going with you?
Yeah, going great. Dalvin Cook is not on as many of my teams as I'd like, but that's all right. We'll soldier on. Joining us on the show today is Jack Miller. Jack is a featured writer here at RotoViz, where he writes Strength in Numbers weekly column. He's also a writer at Bet the Prop. You can follow him on Twitter at JackMiller02. Jack, thanks for joining us. How's it going?
I'm doing pretty well today. Thank you guys for having us on. Happy to be here. Haven't done too many podcasts, so this should be a good time. Looking forward to talking about what happened this weekend with you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we get into it, I want to ask about this new column you've started writing this season at RotoViz, Strength in Numbers. What can you give a kind of elevator pitch about what that's all about?
Yeah, so basically what I try to do with that is I just try to break down like every event that happened in the NFL and condense it into the 5 to 10 most important things that happened, because it's hard to pay attention to all 16 games or whatever every weekend. So I think it's good to have just kind of a synopsis of the single most important event of the weekend, and hopefully use some numbers and stats to show why those are the important things that you should care about and how you can act on them moving forward.
Yeah, definitely. It's been one of my favorite columns to read every week, for sure. It comes out early in the week, so it's good to really get that, kind of orient yourself to the week with those essential stats. Let's jump right into the first news item. Christian McCaffrey rushed 18 times for 69 yards and a touchdown. He caught 10 of 10 targets for 82 yards and another touchdown in the Panthers' Week 9 loss. So following the long layoff, McCaffrey picked up right where he left off and accounted for the majority of the Panthers' backfield touches. Jack, where do you think McCaffrey should be ranked for the rest of the season?
I think if he's getting that type of workload, I mean, there was some concern that maybe like him and Mike Davis would split, especially with McCaffrey coming back for his first game and how well Davis played. But 18 carries, 10 targets, that is an elite workload. That is as much as you can ask for from your RB1. So I think you got to insert him right back at the top of those rankings. I mean, I don't think you can expect 2019 McCaffrey, just because I don't think you can expect that from anyone. But I think it's pretty fair to put him right back at the top where you drafted him. So him, Kamara, Dalvin, whoever else, I think those are the top guys in fantasy, the most valuable players you can have in your team right now.
I actually have, I think just thinking back on it, I might have Dalvin ahead of CMC and Kamara. Again, he's not getting the kind of work that I'm kind of used to, or at least like the receiving workload. But man, this Vikings team really is obsessed with the idea of really just not letting Kirk throw the ball at all. Only 20 pass attempts yet again. Dalvin Cook, 22 carries, 206 yards and 2 scores. And he got both of his targets. You know, so that's not a surprise, at least as far as I'm concerned. But I think Cook has quite a lot of explosion, and there's not a lot really of competition, at least as far as the target tree goes. It's like Jefferson, Thielen. I guess if you count whatever Rudolph is, I mean, they gave Amir Abdullah a target and he caught a receiving touchdown, you know, revenge game against the Lions and all that. But I do think Dalvin should be up there. For CMC, like you said, this is definitely RB1 elite workload. I also strongly, strongly believe that the Panthers are a lot worse when they try and do this, right? Like they're funneling, you know, the bulk of the work through CMC. You're seeing a lot of Robbie, a lot of Curtis Samuel for some reason. Like we haven't seen this movie before, and like absolutely no DJ Moore. I don't know if that's because the Chiefs were good at like containing him, but as is wont to do, the second you give you mess around with KC long enough, let him hang around long enough, and Mahomes is just going to come out and absolutely eat your lunch, and that's what he did. And you know what? I'm glad that Mahomes did, because this is what the Panthers earned this by deciding that they're going to just turn their offense into a CMC centric offense, despite all the exciting playmakers that they have. And so toughest of scenes here for the Panthers. And yeah, that's why I'm kind of biased against him a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, I was huge on, oh, sorry, you go, Blair.
No, go ahead.
Okay, so I was huge on DJ Moore going into the season, as I think a lot of us were. But what has kind of happened is the role that we thought DJ Moore would be in with the underneath routes has actually gone to Robbie Anderson. And then the Robbie Anderson, what we thought would be Robbie Anderson's role with a deep threat over-the-top guy, that's gone to DJ Moore. I don't have their depth of target numbers off the top of my head, but I know that Robbie is the underneath guy, DJ Moore is the taking the top off the defense guy. And I think, honestly, this is probably like long overdue, but it's DJ Moore had 2 catches today, I think. And I think we definitely need to recalibrate expectations for him, at least this season, because he's just not in the role that he was last year and the role we expected for him.
Yeah. I mean, looking at this box score for Carolina, seeing DJ Moore with only 3 targets almost has me thinking that, we might expect McCaffrey. Obviously, we won't expect him to average 10 targets a game from here on out, but I wonder if he's going to continue to be, you know, close to the target leader to this extent, or whether we see more of those targets go Moore's way in the future. I know before he got injured, McCaffrey had not been getting the kind of target volume we saw. Of course, in this game, Bridgewater threw it 49 times, so that kind of accounts for that. Even Mike Davis had 6 targets. For that reason, I kind of see what Hassan is saying about maybe the fragility of McCaffrey's workload in this offense. So that does have me a little bit worried. Do you think, you mentioned recalibrating our expectations for more. Do you think that with McCaffrey back, we need to sort of recalibrate our expectations for everyone in this offense? And maybe we don't get used to seeing this kind of stat line from McCaffrey either.
Yeah, I don't think you can. I mean, you can't expect McCaffrey to get 10 targets every game. I think in his first 2 weeks that he played earlier this season, he had 4 and 5. So I don't think he's going to get 10 targets. I don't think he's going to get the type of receiving workload he had last year. But definitely have to. I do still think that even with that lessened receiving workload moving forward, I still think he's like in that top group. When I say McCaffrey, Kamara, Delvin, I don't think that's not in order or anything. Those are just the three guys that I would be most comfortable with as my RB1. Like, those are the three guys who I think are the three most valuable players in fantasy rest of season, because McCaffrey's not going to get 10 targets every game. But the fact that he had 18 carries and 10 targets in his first game back, even if Teddy did throw the ball 50 times, I mean, we did only have two games of McCaffrey underwhelming in terms of receiving workload at the start of the season. So I still think he's going to get a pretty strong target share in this offense. It's not going to be what it was last year. It's not going to be 10 targets a game like it was today. But yeah, I still think McCaffrey is going to be one of the top guys moving forward, of course, because he's Christian McCaffrey, even if he's not getting that 10 targets a game.
Yeah, for sure. And it's actually a little sad, like, just from a team perspective. We know, like people were joking about it, but like, the Panthers' offense was still very good today, but it wasn't primarily because of CMC. Like, CMC did a lot in the receiving game, don't get me wrong, like, just a tremendous, like, you know, receiver there. But like, it's just like, and you know, being used like that, maybe he has some more value, but like, also jamming targets and jamming touches to him not exactly the way that you're going to try and win. I mean, God knows. I mean, they paid him, but like, my point is, he can still be like a locked in high end RB1, but without having to really need to be the focal point of this offense. I mean, realistically, there's like, those are the three running backs, you know, Kamara, CMC, and Dalvin, who are a clear tier above a lot of the other early round running backs, and who are actually the only ones who were, you know, are gonna probably return value, right? Like, you think of some of the other guys, they're just not as good. And even if, and not taking injury into account, like, they've just been a pretty overwhelming year, I think, for running backs. Just like, this is what happens when you overdraft them, but like, you know, that's not my problem. somebody else's tough scenes. You know, I mean, so as far as this goes, last question on the Panthers' offense before you move on. The tight end, Ian Thomas, officially dust, right?
Yeah, I think he's got to be. I don't think he's even like, I don't even know what he's done the last couple of weeks, because he has not been relevant really the whole season.
Josh Allen completed 31 of 38 passes for 415 yards and 3 touchdowns in the Bills' 44-34 week 9 win over the Seahawks. He also added 7 carries and tacked on 14 additional yards and a touchdown on the ground. The Bills, they never bothered with the running game against the Seahawks' astonishingly bad defense. And Allen, he just had a big first half. He went 24 for 28 for 282 yards and 3 scores. You know, and today was a badly needed effort from a player who was in a smash spot, and he delivered. You know, what are your expectations from Josh Allen and the Bills' offense for the rest of the season?
First of all, I think that was a really smart game plan from the Bills, because we know that you can tear up the Seahawks through the air. And I saw somewhere that they had 28 first-half passes and 3 first-half rush attempts, which is a pretty unbelievable split in terms of run-to-pass ratio. So that was definitely a good thing, and it was definitely very necessary. But in terms of rest of season outlook for Allen, I think, I mean, he's still getting that rushing workload. as a passer, he's been, I mean, the first like 4 weeks of the season, it looked like he was going to be an MVP candidate. Then he slowed down a little bit, and then he just went off today against a defense that has been pretty kind to opposing quarterbacks. So I don't think this game should change your expectations rest of season for Allen too much, just because we already have 8 games before today of Allen kind of being the same up and down passer, although much, much better than he was last year, and then getting that rushing workload. And then he went off today. He had one of his higher percentile outcome games today against a pretty bad pass defense in a spot where it was predictable that he would have done well. So I don't think you should like go crazy about how Josh Allen did today, but obviously it was a fantastic game. For the passing game, I just think it's going to be, I guess, more of the same, with Diggs being a wide receiver one, John Brown still being a solid contributor. But I think the most interesting thing about this offense maybe would be the running back split, because, and this is something I've written about in Strength and Numbers a couple times this year, because Singletary only had 2 carries today. He had 3 targets. Zach Moss had 2 targets, I think. And then Moss had 9 carries, the Singletary's 2. So and Moss is getting the goal line touches. So I think at this point, Moss is definitely the guy you want in this backfield moving forward. If they're splitting carries, splitting targets, and then Moss is getting goal line work, and we saw Moss get a ton more carries today. So I think Moss is probably the guy you want in that backfield moving forward, and Singletary maybe a little harder to trust, although they're both probably going to be tough to trust.
Yeah, I agree with that about about Josh Allen and his outlook going forward. I was just looking at the upcoming schedule. They are at Arizona next week before their bye. We saw Tua put up a pretty big game against them. I think we'll be discussing him a bit later. Then home against the Chargers at San Francisco. And then home against Pittsburgh. So there are some teams on here that, other quarterbacks have been able to put up points against. So I think he's got, some favorable games coming up. So, given what he did today and what he has done in the past with a few of the early games, I think, I'm pretty bullish on his outlook going forward. And especially if he's getting these big contributions from guys like Gabriel Davis, who had 70 yards and a touchdown on 5 targets. That's nice to see. We kind of know what Josh Allen is. He's going to be a little bit up and down. But, I'm definitely hopeful that there are more games like this coming.
Definitely. I mean, He's clearly taken a step forward as a passer this year, and then he's still running. So I definitely would like Josh Allen rest of season.
Hassan, before we got on, you had some hot takes about John Brown. He had caught 8 of 11 targets for 99 yards, but you're not happy with that. What's going on there?
No, I was absolutely totally fine with John Brown. It's just that like both him and Diggs unfortunately didn't get scores. They both had massive days today, and they just and the Bills were. I mean, maybe Allen was just heat checking or whatever, but like he was just throwing it to random members of the Bills Mafia. Like every touchdown went to just rando guys, right?
And Tyler Croft had a touchdown today.
Tyler Croft. He just looks like an overgrown baby. Yeah, Gabriel Davis, who went off. Cole Beasley, had 39 yards. Isaiah McKenzie got into the game, right? Like, it's just some of the weird, just, like, a really impressive showing, I think, from Josh Allen, who, I mean, realistically, this is kind of the Seahawks' biggest issue, right? Their inability to really, like, their defense has kind of fallen apart. As you can tell, they just give it up to everyone and anyone, and when Russ is out there getting picked off, it's just difficult to win games. They're still a very, very good team, in my opinion. The Seahawks, I mean, I don't know about the Bills. Like they could be potential fraudulent in the playoffs, but this was actually a fun game. All things considered, I mean, if you were playing cash and you didn't have Josh Allen as your cash QB, You might have to rethink some things. That said, if you also, you know, we're playing DFS and decided to take the value and like try to lock it ahead of DK Metcalf, you probably also have to think some things through because I don't know if you guys know this, but this is very clearly not a 1A, 1B situation. It's a wide receiver one, and then Tyler Lockett also exists situation. Like there's this very old don't talk to me or my son ever again meme, except the DK Metcalf is the dad and like Lockett is the son.
Yeah, we talked about Metcalf last episode a bit about wide receiver rankings. I actually asked Sean and Colm on overtime whether they thought Metcalf should be the dynasty wide receiver one. I know, Jack, you've written about Metcalf at least once, maybe a couple times in Strength and Numbers. What's your take on sort of his standing in dynasty wide receiver rankings?
Yeah, I think he's got to be right near the top. I mean, the stuff he's doing this year is completely ridiculous. I mean, honestly, like, I would trust your guys' dynasty takes over me just because I'm not as experienced there, but my first instinct would be he is right near that top tier, if not all the way at the top. What did Sean and Colm say? Did they have DK wide receiver one?
They kind of didn't answer directly, but Metcalf, you know, could come out of this week being close to the wide receiver one on the season. He's still only 22 years old. I think Sean's basic take was, you know, there are still guys like Hopkins and Devontae Adams who you can maybe rely on for more points if you need to, you know, if you're playing to win this season. But because in Dynasty you want to have a long-term focus, it was kind of like you can definitely justify Metcalf at wide receiver one. So
sorry, Jack, you were saying?
Oh yeah, I just think it would be fun if the top two wide receivers in fantasy football are both from Ole Miss, and with DK and AJ Brown doing what they're doing right now, yeah, it looks like that's very possible.
I think it is. We talked about this like last week, right? Like, from a tier perspective, it's who you prefer, right? And I am partial to AJ Brown. And I mean, like, if people want to ask me why, I think a lot of it just has to do with the fact that the guy smashed with Mariota. I mean, like, he made Mariota look serviceable, right? If you guys don't remember, in his first game as a rookie against the Cleveland Browns, AJ Brown, you know, went for 100 yards. And one of his catches was he caught the ball in open space and beckoned the Cleveland safety to come over, and he stiff-armed them into the dirt and picked up like 30-plus yards after that. You know, like, just imagine, you know, like, your second catch in the NFL, first game as a rookie, beckoning over a respected veteran safety whose name I don't remember, because after AJ Brown stiff-armed him, that was the end of their career. Like, that was that is just the kind of, like, that's a way to announce yourself. And like, DK has been tremendous as well. So like, as far as I'm concerned, like, it just kind of comes down to personal preference, right?
Yeah, I agree with that.
All right, before we get into our game this week, let's take a moment for a word from our sponsors. Even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier, like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through December 31st. Football is back in full swing. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team player and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. All right, today we're playing Fantasy Believe It or Not. Hassan, you want to remind us of the rules?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I think we're getting a pretty good idea of where some of these guys are gonna end the season. So just a quick recap, QB would be top 12 QB, same with TE. So will they finish as a TE1 at the end of the season? For running back and wide receiver, it's going to be a top 24 finish for each player.
All right, first up, Juju Smith-Schuster caught 6 of 7 targets for 93 yards and a touchdown in the Steelers' Week 9 win over the Cowboys.
Honestly, I think Deontay Johnson is probably the wide receiver one there, and then Claypool's coming on too. It'll probably be close for Juju. He's wide receiver 29 right now, but I could see it going either way here. But I think Deontay is the main guy there.
Oh man, you clearly didn't grind the tape hard enough. Like Juju dragged like 2 Cowboys defenders with him into the end zone.
I did see that. That was crazy. But Deontay had like 13 targets, I think. So I still lean that direction.
I am gonna stand by my hot conspiracy theory take that the Steelers are basically trying to AB and Lev Bell out of and Juju and are gonna try to get out of paying him for cap reasons. So They're gonna do their best to suppress his volume. Toughest of scenes for us, but I'm with you, Jack. I agree.
Where would you like to see Juju end up if that's the case?
Oh man, very good question, and one that I actually haven't considered or even thought about. From an actual availability perspective, Miami.
That would be fun. Anywhere but the Jets, just not the Jets.
Right. Yeah, but like
unless
Miami,
they get Trevor, that would be cool.
I don't know. I'm partial to Fields myself, but I would like to see Juju probably on Miami, right? Like he walks in and he's like ostensibly the alpha there, right?
Yeah, I think that'd be a really good spot, him and Tua.
Yeah, so Parker kind of shows the dangers of these fifth-year breakout candidates, you know, who have underperformed their capital and talent profile for years, and it's just like the 1 year blip is quite likely just the 1 year blip, right? Like who they are and who they've shown us for the last few years is probably who they're going to be, and these they have outlier seasons now. If you went out and assumed this meant he was going to be like everything was fine and he was fixed, that's fine, but from a prior's perspective, you probably have to weigh the fact that for 4 years he did nothing, right? And then you have Preston Williams, who's he's looking good. He's shown flashes, but like this could also be the flashes of he's a later round pick, not really showing sustained excellence. Probably works better in a complementary role. In fact, both receivers work in a complementary role to someone like a Juju, who we've seen carry the offense even in Antonio Brown's absence. So I think that would probably is the one that comes to mind immediately that I think makes like for a perfect fit from an especially from a need perspective.
Just one note: it was actually Claypool who had 13 targets today, so that's kind of interesting.
Oh yeah, so Deontay had 10. Okay, yeah, but yeah, so Juju is third among Steelers wideouts and targets, so that is not great.
Yeah, and
he did get the touchdown.
And he made hay on his 7 targets, man. And they weren't really targeting him.
He had the most yards too, yeah.
They weren't really targeting him early. They actually they broke glass in case of emergency and started throwing to Juju, and he just started making plays. Like the second they started targeting him, good things started happening. And another place that they might like another couple of places that make sense for Juju would probably be Cleveland and Baltimore, both in division rivals. and both teams are in need, like a dire need of an actual alpha wide receiver. I mean, Marquise, you know, Hollywood Brown, call him whatever you will, but he really is like a talent. Like he really is like a beta. Like he really is, right? Same thing goes with Cleveland, yeah. Right? Like Cleveland are rumored to be shopping OBJ.
How much of that is Baltimore's offense, though?
No, the offense looked pretty good when they started targeting Mark Andrews and they moved a little bit, right? I mean, it's hard. It's a chicken and egg problem, right?
Sure.
If you think Marquise Hollywood Brown is like an alpha wide receiver, but then he just continues to come up small when targeted, then that's really a personnel issue, right? We've never really seen Lamar have the ability. We've just not seen him really have a Juju or any of guys in these type of molds. And you know, for as much as people try and want to make passing, you know, the tight end is the main vein of the passing offense, which was just the dumbest narrative, really just pathetic, just analysis all around, frankly. It works. And even then rarely enough for very sustained stretches of success. You know, like you can never go wrong with more weapons. And especially for someone like a Juju Smith-Schuster, right? Like having him be this like Michael Thomas-esque character for Lamar, maybe it changes like how the offense functions a little bit. Whereas you're not really getting that out of a Marquise Hollywood Brown. And same goes for Cleveland, right? OBJ has been, frankly, just a pathetic trade, right? All around. Who people think of OBJ as is should really be recalibrated. Like just who he is as a dynasty asset and who he is as a player, he's just not like it's very clear that like OBJ is good and like maybe he'll never hit it because of like hit his theoretical ceiling that we once thought he had because of injuries, but it could just be that he started off his career white hot and you shouldn't be making inferences based on half a season's worth of data and like really who he is you know, what we see is just his inconsistent streaky whiteout and toughest of scenes for anyone who really believed that like Jarvis Landry is like a low end wide receiver one, just a really, really bad showing by anyone who believed that. Just sad stuff all around there. Keenan Allen caught 9 of 11 targets for 103 yards and a touchdown in the Chargers' Week 9 loss to the Raiders.
Believe that for sure. He's getting ridiculous target numbers with Herbert, and Herbert looks like he's been the real deal. So I could see Keenan Allen. I think he's at like high-end wide receiver 2 range right now, so he could easily finish the year as a top 12 receiver.
Antonio Gibson rushed 6 times for 20 yards and a touchdown in Washington's Week 9 loss to the Giants, adding 3 receptions for 35 additional yards.
I think he's going to be right on that RB2-3 fringe. Because he's getting a little bit better receiving usage now, but McKissick, I think, had 8 catches today or something ridiculous like that. That should be going to Gibson, I think. Like, Gibson is just such a more dynamic player, but as long as they keep using McKissick, I think it limits his ceiling somewhat.
Tyler Lockett is someone we've talked about, but he caught 4 of 7 targets for 40 yards in the Seahawks' Week 9 loss to the Bills.
Yeah, I would bet on him to finish outside the top 24, but he's another guy who's probably going to be close just because he might have another blow-up game like he had against, I think, Arizona was a couple weeks ago. But DK, I agree with you, Hassan, where DK is the clear alpha in this offense, and then Lockett is just kind of the secondary guy.
Brandon Cooks caught 3 of 9 targets for 83 yards and a touchdown in Week 9 against the Jaguars.
I would also not believe Cooks. I think Fuller is the lead guy in that offense, and I don't think they're going to end with 2 top 24 wideouts. So I'd bet on Cook to finish outside the top 24.
Man, 3 of 9 targets is also fairly inefficient, though, especially against the Jaguars, right? It'd be interesting to see what his air yards distribution profile looked like, but Deshaun's pretty good at throwing a deep ball, so I'm just going to go with my default assumption of this is a Cooks issue because he's underperformed volume with Tom Brady, Drew Brees in a dome, the 1 year where Jared Goff was good. you know, like, I think we've got a pretty long track record of Cooks not being as good as people want to think he is, but probably better than I think he is, but not better than, you know, his supporters think he is.
I think Cooks has generally been a plus efficiency receiver wherever he's gone, apart from maybe last season. Although even last season he might have been. I'd have to go back and look. But it kind of looks like a bad game, but he still had 83 yards and a touchdown. So even in this, on 9 targets, he might have ended above what you would expect given his opportunity. I'm not sure.
57 of those yards came on the first pass, though, on his first catch.
Well,
not great. Not this guy, though. DJ Chark, he got 7 of 12 targets for 146 yards and a touchdown in week 9 against the Texans.
Yeah, and it was the first game with Luton as the starter, and Luton kind of peppered him with targets. So I think moving forward, you got to be optimistic about Chark and how Luton used him. But he probably won't finish as a top. I think he's like he's a little down there at the moment because he also missed a couple games. But he's definitely a viable fantasy option, I think, moving forward.
Same game, James Robinson had 25 carries for 99 yards and a touchdown in week 9 against the Texans.
Definitely believe James Robinson. I think he's definitely shown enough. He's an RB1. He's getting used both facets, rushing and receiving. Getting a real, maybe not elite level, maybe elite level workload. I mean, 25 carries James Robinson, I think, is the real deal. RB1 rest of season, in my opinion.
Only reason I put him on here was so I could remind everyone that his nickname is J-God, not J-Rob. Please change it, everybody else. Irv Smith got 2 of 4 targets for 10 yards and 2 touchdowns in the Vikings' week 9 win over the Lions.
Yeah, I would not put too much stock in Irv Smith. I think it's Thielen, it's Jefferson, and this is a low-volume passing offense. So I don't think Irv Smith is someone you want to be depending on in fantasy rest of the season.
Yeah, are we worried about what might happen in this offense? I mean, I know Hassan has Cook as his running back 1, given the kind of rushing volume he's getting, but he only had 2 targets. Obviously, he turned those into 46 yards, so it's probably all right. But if that rushing efficiency isn't there and Cousins has to throw, Jefferson has looked really good, but what's basically our outlook for a lot of these pass catchers who we think are kind of intriguing? Irv Smith is someone I own a lot in Dynasty, and Jefferson was one of my favorite rookies coming in. Are these guys just dead, or is there a way we see them bounce back if the Vikings have to throw? Can Cook keep up this efficiency? I know that's like 25 questions, but I'm confused about this offense.
I don't think Cook is going to continue with the efficiency he's been at for like the last couple of weeks, but he's still getting a ton of carries, and this offense wants to run the ball. So Dalvin, like we talked about earlier, just in that top mix. Irv, actually, I was just looking at the numbers, and he did have 5 targets 2 weeks in a row in weeks 5 and 6. By week 7, week 8, he only had 1, and then he had 4 targets and a couple of touchdowns this week. So I don't think he's going to be, at least in like redraft, viable tight end, starting tight end. But the last month or so has definitely been encouraging. But I don't think in this offense this year, I don't think it's going to all come together for him.
I mean, like, the only time you can really feel confident in slotting in and a lot of these, like, relying on these ancillary Vikings pieces is when they're going to get into shootouts. I mean, the fact that Matt Patricia still has a job is kind of pathetic because that guy came out and played to lose, right? Like, just toothless play calling, using Adrian Peterson. Like, there was no tomorrow. Like, it was just pathetic play calling. Like, just a god-awful game all around. The Vikings were toothless, man. The Lions, sorry. They get like punched in the face repeatedly. It was legitimately pathetic watching the Lions lose to the Vikings the way they did, because they just go out and they're back. And it looks like without Kenny Golladay, that entire offense falls apart. It's just genuinely spineless play calling. from Matt Patricia and the Lions. As far as the Vikings go, just taking a peek at their schedule, they're going to be at the Bears next week. Not really interested in these ancillary guys like Irv Smith in games like the Bears or the Cowboys, potentially against the Panthers, maybe the Jaguars, definitely against the Buccaneers and the Saints. So those are the games where you want to at least hope that you get to see some of that increased play volume for some of these ancillary guys, right? And that might actually make you feel a little bit more confident, like slotting in Irv Smith, because, you know, he's slowly overtaking Kyle Rudolph. And like, it's just hard to tell, because the Vikings would honestly rather do anything else than pass the football. They wish the forward pass was not invented.
Yeah, going back to the Lions for a sec, they are finally using Swift as their lead guy. I think Swift had 13 carries or something. I don't know if that's right. I'm just going based off memory here. And then I think in terms of snaps, it was Swift first, Kerryon second, AP third. So definitely still too much Peterson, but they are at least slowly moving in the right direction.
Yeah, they just need to start every game down 21 points. And I think that's when they're just going to, like, that's when it's Swift time.
Yeah, the worrying thing is that they threw the ball to Adrian Peterson 5 times, and, you know, he caught 3 of them for 14 yards, so they kind of got what they deserved. But hopefully that's the last time we see that.
Oh, really? Yeah, only 3 targets. I think Patricia is gonna try and give AP like an all-time season high in targets soon, like a career high.
Well, I don't know what to say. I mean, Peterson he's been he just finds a way to get on whatever team has my favorite rookie running back a lot of the time. So,
yeah, it was kind of funny how they signed him like 3 days before the season, and then he comes in and takes over the backfield week 1. He was on the team for half a week, and DeAndre Swift was irrelevant to start the season.
It looks like Swift also had 5 targets, so at least they are, you know, they're not marginalizing him at this point. So still some hope. A lot of hope, I think, for Swift. All right, moving on to regular news item number 3. Drew Lock completed 25 of 48 passes for 313 yards, 2 touchdowns, and an interception in the Broncos' Week 9 loss to the Falcons. He added 7 rushes for 47 yards and a touchdown. So Jack, Lock set a career high in passing yards, mostly due to him also setting a career high in pass attempts. He only averaged 6.5 yards per attempt and missed a number of crucial throws. Do you think that Lock might have turned the corner, or is this just a sort of pure volume performance? And I guess, what are your expectations for his outlook for the rest of the season?
Yeah, I'm not super high on Drew Lock moving forward. He had 6.5 yards per attempt today. 313 yards looks pretty good on paper. A couple touchdowns, rushing touchdown. Like, that's a solid fantasy day on paper, but 6.5 yards per attempt isn't good. And he's also at 6.5 yards per attempt on the season. He also had 6.5 yards per attempt last season. And again, like, that's not great. And the fact that he only averaged 6.5 yards per attempt against the Falcons defense is not a great sign. He has strung together a couple of nice weeks in a row against the Chargers and Falcons, but I think at this point you have to trust the larger sample of him being a below average quarterback, and especially since they're missing Sutton, I would not want to be dependent on Lock as my quarterback for the rest of the year.
Man, Drew Lock is the garbage time king. This guy, like the only time he racked up his stats was when the game wasn't even close. The best thing in this game, well, the most unfortunate thing, is both the tight ends, Noah Fant and Albert O, woke up. Oh, I knew this last week and I can't get it. Albert O. Just like, they both missed large swaths of the game with injuries. And so it's good to see that with the game firmly out of hand, and Denver putting up a 21-point fourth quarter, we actually saw Jerry Jeudy just smash and Hamler smash. kind of makes you excited for when this team gets a real quarterback, which I'm really hoping Elway does this season, because this is just maddening.
For sure. Judy and Hamler are both super fun prospects. So I also hope they get a good quarterback. But given Elway's history of picking quarterbacks, I'm not crazy, crazy optimistic that they go out there and get the guy that can actually deliver Judy and Hamler the ball efficiently. But we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, Locke obviously wasn't good today and hasn't really looked good for many starts. I wonder if this offense looks different next season with Sutton fully healthy and Judy and Hamler in year two. Like, with those additional weapons, does Locke's, you know, does his talent make less of a difference maybe?
Yeah, we'll see if they give him another year. I don't know what the like narrative surrounding Drew Locke in Denver is right now. But if they give him another year, it would have to be make or break, because if he has Sutton, Judy, and Hamler and he's still not putting up efficient numbers, then it's definitely got to be time to move on if they don't look for someone new this offseason.
No, they have to look for someone new. This is not going to work. I mean, you can just tell. Like, he just wasn't particularly good last year in small stretches. He hasn't been good this year in small stretches. It's just he doesn't seem to have it, man. Like, the guy looks – he looks really comfortable when the Broncos have like 0% chance to win the game. Looks very, very happy when he's playing against prevent defense and no pressure on his face and having to make all these like throws that he could probably make in practice. But you know, he just clearly like they cannot compete with Drew Locke under center, unfortunately. It's just not like they really just need to move on. Like, they had the flukiest of wins against the Chargers last week. I mean, the Chargers also need to move on from Anthony Lynn. The Broncos really do need to find a new quarterback, and the sooner they do it, the better it'll be for them, because this is – the team clearly knows how to draft. They chase the right positions during the draft, like especially from, like, a value perspective. They seem to be good at picking out who good players are. They're just really bad at, like, figuring out – like who their quarterback can be, you know, like we've talked about this before, but it's almost like they're trying to reprise the Peyton Manning Super Bowl run with worse quarterbacks each time somehow, as if that Peyton Manning wasn't bad enough. They're trying to do it with a harder degree of difficulty.
Yeah, I definitely agree that they should move on this offseason. We'll see if they actually do decide to go that route.
Tua Tagovailoa completed 20 of 28 passes for 248 yards, 2 touchdowns, and no interception. The Dolphins' is a week 9 win over the Cardinals. He also added 35 rushing yards on 7 attempts. You know, last week, Tua Tagovailoa had a fairly abysmal start to his NFL career, but he appears to be, you know, far better than what we saw last week. What are your expectations for Tua for the rest of the season?
I definitely, as a prospect, I like Tua a lot. He was one of the most efficient college quarterbacks in recent memory. For this season only, I think he's probably more in the QB2 range. I don't know how many rushing attempts he had today. I know he can run, but I don't think he's going to be one of the Konami code guys who's going to put up massive rushing production every week. But long term, I think Tua is definitely going to be the guy for the Dolphins. But moving forward this season with Devontae Parker, Preston Williams, Jakeem Grant, they don't have too many weapons, a wide receiver, and he is still a rookie. And I think for the most part, their defense is actually very good. So I think that I don't think that he's going to be in the situation where he has to sling the ball a ton, win them a game. So I think that for the most part, he's just more in the QB2 streamers tier for now, rather than someone that is kind of more of a set and forget quarterback. I don't think he's going to be there this year.
Yeah, I agree. I'm pretty bullish on Tua long term. Like you said, I think the lack of weapons in Miami is a concern. You know, Preston Williams looked pretty good to start this game, but left with a foot injury. So we'll have to see what the news is on that. Gaskin obviously didn't play. They gave the ball to Jordan Howard 10 times, and he scored a touchdown. They also had Salvan Ahmed running a bit, and he looked okay. But obviously, you know, there are a lot of problems on this team, and just in terms of like weapons, you know, I have my own kind of interests in the backfield here. But what's your take on this backfield moving forward without Gaskin?
I think it's probably not going to be super lucrative in terms of fantasy production. Jordan Howard had 10 carries today, 19 yards, and then was saved by a touchdown. That's a pretty vintage Jordan Howard style line. That's like Matt Asiata type style line, honestly. So I think Howard will probably be like the main early down back, and then Ahmed is definitely interesting. We'll see if he can garner more of the work moving forward, because he it won't take much, I don't think, to do better than what Howard's going to produce. So for the time being, I think it's kind of wait and see mode. I think Ahmed is probably the more interesting guy, but Gaskin, how long is Gaskin expected to be out? Just like a month or 3 weeks or something, right?
Yeah, I think 3 weeks.
So
right, they placed him on IR, so at a minimum 3 weeks.
Yeah, I think I saw the original timeline was 3 weeks or so. So there's a couple more weeks only, and I don't think either of these guys are going to distance themselves over the next 2 weeks before Gaskin gets back and reassumes his job as the main guy there.
Yeah, I mean, I also have my own personal preference as to who should be the lead running back.
Praise the Laird.
Exactly. But the world is not ready for it. Unfortunately, for listeners who are not aware, Blair, do you want to give them a quick rundown?
A quick rundown on Patrick Laird, greatest running back ever to set foot on an NFL field?
Exactly. Well, you once called him a 40-year-old CMC, but really what you meant was he is the you know, the guy who CMC tries to be.
Yeah, exactly. CMC wishes he were Patrick Laird. No, I mean, actually, Laird today had the only backfield target, it looks like.
Yeah.
And he gained 17 yards on it. So, you know, in terms of like efficiency, I mean, Ahmed was all right, 38 yards on 7 carries, but I think that the Dolphins, it would be in their interest to try and get the ball in Laird's hands more. So I mean, it wasn't a great fantasy line, but I'm pretty encouraged by what I saw.
You know, 17 yards per target. If you give him 10 targets a game and just extrapolate that, you're looking at a beast.
Well, I mean, realistically, we joke, but he should be seeing more work than Adam Shaheen, Malcolm Perry, potentially also Mac Hollins, definitely Durham Smythe. And then you get to like the Mike Gesicki, Jakeem Grant. He should probably see more work than them too. Like, yeah, maybe he should be the 1B to Parker's 1A, but that's about it. That's where I'm going to draw the line. And who knows? Like, maybe the Finns are just trying to slow play it, right? Last week, they didn't ask, like, Tua to do anything because the defense won the game for them. Might as well like not show their entire hand. This week, you know, they don't want to dip their entire hand with Laird. So like, you know, keep the faith, guys. Keep the faith.
I like that you went to 1B, but he is not capable of beating out Devontae Parker. That is where the line is drawn.
No, I was just trying to be realistic, right? Like, there is still something has to be said for the fact that, like, you know, Parker is, you know, on paper the 1A, you know, like he, you know, he's not particularly great as I mentioned earlier. Like, so, you know, there's like the door's open, you know, for like Laird to really emerge as like a 10 target a game CMC-esque kind of guy. He doesn't really need like the rushing workload, because it's just for the plebs, you know what I mean? But the receiving workload, yeah.
Like Wayne Gretzky in fantasy hockey, what they had to do is they split him into goals and assists. So like next year, I think we might have to split Patrick Laird into rushing and receiving, just because he's going to be such a monster in both areas.
Yeah. Yeah. The other guy that I think a lot of us were excited to roster, I mean, as excited as you can be for a Miami Dolphin, going into the season was Mike Gesicki. Obviously, there's some uncertainty with how he would mesh with Tua, and he hasn't looked all that great in a lot of games this season. But today he had four targets, caught three of them for 42 yards. What are you doing with Gesicki on teams that where you own him?
Well, I own him on a lot of teams, and for the most part, it has not been a great season. But he had four targets today, which still isn't great. He had two targets last week in a game where the Dolphins didn't really ask Tua to do much. So six targets in two games with Tua. I mean, tight end is not a deep position, so you very well could be in a position where you have to trot out Gesicki, but he definitely has not lived up to my expectations. There's going to be games where he gets, you know, six plus targets, maybe catches a touchdown, but I don't think he's one of those weekly dependable options like I was hoping he would blossom into.
Yeah, I mean, he's had in the past one 11-target game. He had the six-target game in week five. Obviously, both of those were with Fitzpatrick. So still probably not enough information just in these last two games to go on. If Preston Williams has to miss some time with this foot injury, then maybe we see Gesicki getting worked in a bit more. You know, they play the Chargers, then at Denver, then at the New York Jets. So I don't know offhand how those matchups are for tight ends. Probably pretty middling if I had to guess. So, yeah, tough to say at this point. Like you said, I'm still holding on. Tight end is such a wasteland that you really can't afford to. you sometimes have to start Gesicki just because he's the only option you have. So. But I mean, I'm still hopeful, still holding in Dynasty, I think, for now, until we get a larger sample of his games with Tua.
Yeah, I think that's probably the way to play it.
All right, that'll do it for this edition of the Fantasy Football Report. Please remember to rate and review the RotoViz Radio channel on Apple Podcasts. Special thanks to our guest, Jack Miller. Be sure to follow him on Twitter at JackMiller02. For Hassan Rahim on Twitter at HRR5010, I'm Blair Andrews at Am I the Real Blair. Thanks for listening.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.